What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. Corey, how are we doing?
Doing good, Nick. It is here. It is the regular season of the NBA. We're a weekend of the 2019-2020 NBA season. It's Christmas now for the next 5 months.
It has finally arrived. No more preseason, no more offseason. We are down to regular season games. We'll be dropping on Mondays and Thursdays. You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Also, make sure you're heading to DesignTree/OffTheGlass using discount code OTG5. Save yourself $5 on some OTG merch. But Corey, to start off, let's just talk about some guys who have really popped off this first week. Who you got?
I mean, I'll save your guy for you. I got a shout out to Luka Doncic. Yep. Luka's been a stud so far. Obviously, I'm not so high on Dallas's roster as a whole, but Luka Doncic has been fun. Porzingis gets a notable nod. But Luka Doncic has been everything as advertised. Definitely looks a little bit slimmer. Definitely looks more athletic. In the OTG top 50, we had him ranked 39th, and a lot of people gave a shit for that. And me and Jack were a little bit hesitant to give him too high of a ranking too early, but 39 is already way too low, or way too high. He's going to be a lot lower on this list by the time we get into our next edition of the top 50.
I mean, he's arguably playing like a top 25 player. You mentioned Luka, you know, averaging 29 points a game, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 50% from the field. Already has some major big moments. And you mentioned Kristaps Porzingis. I've been impressed with Porzingis. He looks really good. You wouldn't know that he missed an entire season of basketball last year, averaging 26 points, 46% from the field, 40% from three, and some deep ones as well. He's still racking up the blocks, almost 3 blocks a game. Obviously, his body looks a little bit stiff, but the skill and the talent is still there for Porzingis. I mean, Luka and KP are looking like one of the best duos in the entire NBA.
Yeah, the Dallas Mavericks have a really good, two really good building blocks going forward. It was a little bit of a risk getting Porzingis or trading for Porzingis coming off the ACL injury. But looking back, it's a move that Mark Cuban and company had to make.
Yeah, and he's on a minute restriction now, playing around 30 minutes a game. When that pumps up, so with those numbers and him and Luka, creating more chemistry between the two, that's going to be a dynamic duo. And if they can get some more talent, the supporting cast has been pretty good to start the season. But if they get more talent in there, Dallas is going to be a problem, even in the West.
Definitely.
You mentioned, I got to talk about my guy, Kyrie Irving, who's just lit it up in Brooklyn. 37 points a game, already had a game winner against the Knicks, ton of tough shots, highlight plays on the reg, 45% from the field, 41% from three. No new acquisition has scored more points in their first three games. Kyrie's already scored, I believe, over 100 points in his first three games as a Net.
Yeah, Kyrie's been a lot of fun. A couple losing a couple of tough losses for the Nets in general coming late. The Jay Crowder buzzer beaters last night. Sorry, Kyrie just missing at the buzzer the other night. And also, like, what a great look he got. I mean, to lose the ball and have to, like, recover like that and still getting able to get that good of a shot off just speaks volumes to what Kyrie Irving can do on the basketball court. But he's been ridiculous. And, obviously it's unfortunate that we're not going to see Kevin Durant till either end of this year, next year. But once you have those two guys on the floor, the future looks really bright for Brooklyn. And so far, Kyrie hasn't been, off the rails, off the court yet.
Yeah, everything has looked really positive. Kyrie mentioned after missing that potential game winner in the home opener, his teammates were there to have his back. And after he hit the game winner against the Knicks, he gave his jersey to his dad. So there's a different emotional tie to Brooklyn. A lot of people don't know. Kyrie grew up being a New Jersey Nets fan. And that's very apparent in these first couple games. And people look, well, the Nets are 1-2. Nothing to do with Kyrie Irving. A lot to do with that defense, which you can find out more on the Brooklyn Buzz. But talking about another player I actually was lucky enough to see on opening night, Karl-Anthony Towns. He's looking like the best center in the NBA right now. Obviously, extremely small sample size with three games. But that three-point shot for a seven-footer is ridiculous.
Yeah, the fact that his offensive game is just so dominant, right? He can beat you in the post. He can beat you around the rim. He has the jump shot to his game. The defense, from the stretches that I've watched, obviously I don't watch full Minnesota Timberwolves game. No offense to Timberwolves fans. But in the stretches I have watched, like last night against Miami, his defense has gotten a lot better.
100%.
Now, he's not a fantastic defender. Like, I'm not saying he's a Rudy Gobert by any means or even a Joel Embiid, but there's clearly more effort. There's clearly more defensive IQ in his game. He knows where to position his body to use his size and weight more effectively. And that's the promising fact, is we always knew that there was so much offensive talent with Karl Anthony Towns, and we're starting to finally see the defense catch up, and that's going to make him a complete package.
Yeah, not only the defense, but he's really improved as a passer, averaging 5 assists a game this season. And he's never going to be, you know, a defensive player of the year, but he has good size. He understands verticality. And just getting back to that three-point shot, it's guard-like skills. He's not just shooting wide-open threes. He's shooting step-back threes, handling the ball. It's just extremely tough for most centers in this league to try to defend him out there on the perimeter without compromising the entire defense, because now the lane is wide open for other guys to attack. Minnesota, not the most talented team, but when you give guys an open paint section, they're going to be able to score inside.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Who are some other guys that have popped off for you?
So I got to give a shout out to Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
From the Pelicans. Obviously, the Pelicans are 0-3. I don't care about their record.
It doesn't feel 0-3, though. Like, it doesn't feel like they've lost three games. It feels like way more positive for some reason.
Definitely. I mean, if you think about it, every game's been relatively close. I mean, they've been in all these basketball games. But Brandon Ingram looks like he's finally arriving. I mean, averaging 27.3 points per game so far through three games, shooting the ball a lot better, getting to the rim well, a decent rebounder, a decent passer. It's just good to know that outside of what we saw with his time with the Lakers, that Brandon Ingram is starting to pop. And also, I mean, Lonzo Ball, too. There's a lot of praise as well. I mean, those two guys look like completely different players so far for the Pelicans. And almost, you know, obviously the Lakers have Anthony Davis, and they're not going to look back and regret. But I stand on the case that if I'm the Lakers, I'd much rather have kept Brandon Ingram or Lonzo Ball, preferably Lonzo Ball over Kyle Kuzma right now. I just think those two guys are more productive than what Kyle Kuzma can give you at the height of his ceiling. Obviously, we haven't seen Kuzma yet, so he could make me eat my words and change my mind. But Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, those two guys have been absolutely studs and look like they're going to be a huge part of the Pelicans' future.
Yeah, they definitely have. And you can see the confidence in Lonzo's game. And the pace that the Pelicans play with is definitely a benefit to him as well. But getting to Ingram, 27 points a game, 52% from the field, 52% from three. He's done an excellent job using his length and his size to work and get in some of these scoring positions and taking advantage of having more ISO possessions in New Orleans that he just wasn't getting in L.A. because of LeBron.
Yeah. No, it's funny how just literally a change in situation, a change in scenery can do for you. Obviously, a different system, definitely playing how they kind of played before LeBron got to L.A., really trying to push the tempo. It's been the Pelicans' game plan. And we don't even have Zion yet on the floor, which I think will even impact these guys in a more positive way when he gets back.
Especially a guy like Lonzo at the point guard position. But talking point guards, arguably the hottest player in the NBA right now, Trae Young, 38 points per game, almost 60% from the field, 55% from three, 9 assists. He's been a show every time he stepped on the court.
So last night, we both talked a little bit off wax on this. So the other night when he played against Detroit, now Detroit was coming off a back-to-back, which I think is really shitty to start off a year with a back-to-back.
It's just rude, like, especially yeah. Compared to like all the other teams don't, or like teams are coming in well-rested and now it's like, oh yeah, we're going to give you a back-to-back. Like, why?
A back-to-back when Blake Griffin's also not even out there yet because of injury. But anyways, Trae Young was automatic in that first quarter for much of that game. What sticks out is the logo three hit, and right before he shot the ball, he like shimmied his shoulders and then shot. Like the level of confidence, the underrated passing of Trae Young as well. I mean, I think at least more people, we definitely know that he's a very good passer. But the guy like can really find holes. He can really find guys in good positions. And not a great defender, but like not bad. Like, I don't know. Like, I always thought he was just a really bad defender. He's really not. I mean, he can use his body to at least create some sort of friction. Not going to clamp anybody by any means, but definitely not like a huge negative on that side of the floor.
Yeah, it's just like his size. You know, again, certain bigger guards are just going to be able to work him down because he's just not big enough. But he does put some effort on that side of the floor. And Atlanta's just been really fun. Excuse me, really fun to watch in general. But any other names that really popped off? The other one I could think of is Siakam, who's improved a lot last season, looked like he took another jump this year.
No, I wanted to give some praise to Siakam because he was a guy that we had in our top 25 for the top 50. And some people were like, well, you can't say, like, what has Siakam done to prove that he's in that category? Well, as me and Jack kind of foresaw, with Kawhi gone and what we saw from Siakam last year, the offense will be predicated around Siakam, and it has been. And Siakam, like you mentioned, really damn good. You know, 28.7 points per game. I don't know if that's going to stay at that kind of level for all season, don't get me wrong, but Siakam has been fantastic for them and looks like he can be, you know, the cornerstone piece or at least the building block going forward, depending on what direction they end up taking this year.
You could tell from the tip-off on opening night, he knew he was going to be the number one option for this Raptors team, and he was going to take on the workload. I mean, he might not average 28, but would I be surprised if he shot 20 shots a game? No, because they essentially need him to do that, and he's been so good offensively. Even New Orleans having a ton of great athletes, they were not able to stay in front of him on opening night. And if he wasn't scoring himself, he was getting to the free throw line or setting up teammates. But two other guards, I know one of your guys on Indiana has been popping off.
Yeah, I mean, Malcolm Brogdon has been better than advertised because Buck fans were trying to convince me that he was nothing more than a system player, really benefited from the fact that he played alongside Giannis Antetokounmpo. Well, him being right now, you know, the I don't want to say he's been the guy for the most part. I mean, he's running the offense. He's being a true point guard, which wasn't necessarily his role in Milwaukee, obviously, with Antetokounmpo getting a lot of the ball handling duties. But he's been good, averaging, you know, a league best 10.5 assists. Averaging 26 points per game, really saw last night in Saturday night in a bad loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers that, you know, Brogdon can definitely be your starting point guard going forward. And then once Victor Oladipo gets back, that backcourt is going to be extremely deadly between the two. Defensive ability by both of the guys, the fact that both of them are very good at getting other guys involved in playmaking, and the fact that, you know, Brogdon probably obviously is, you know, 50-40-90 guy, can hit the three-point shot and you can rely on that. So Brogdon's been better than advertised. I've been a big fan of him so far.
The numbers are ridiculous. It's obviously two games, but 26 points, 54% from the field, 60 from three, leading the NBA in assists at 10.5. It's been a great ad. And like you said, Pacer fans, yeah, it hasn't really started great for the season, but you know you're getting back Oladipo at some point. And if he's healthy, this team is going to have a deadly backcourt and arguably a deadly frontcourt if Sabonis and Turner can find some rhythm. And then just a quick shout-out to a bench player who's really popped off. And we're not necessarily as big as fans, but you got to give him credit, and that's Derrick Rose. 25 points, 64% from the field. He's been a man on a mission. He's been scoring at a really high clip.
It's funny, that was a guy I was going to mention if you didn't mention him. Yeah, Derrick Rose, I mean, he looks leaner, definitely looks leaner in my opinion. Looks fast, the knees look as healthy as I've seen them look. He's moving around the floor extremely fast. You know, I got into a Rose Staines the other night on Twitter because I just like to poke fun at that fan base. But offensively, he's a very good player still. Can be a six-man, I think, of the year candidate this year if he can keep up this kind of play, because Detroit needs that kind of offense. And when he comes off the bench, because I got to watch that full Detroit game, him and Luke Kennard have a ridiculous amount of chemistry at this point in time already. We kind of saw flashes of that in the preseason, but Derrick Rose likes to drive out, and Luke Kennard knows where to be to get a dish-out pass from Rose, which has been really beneficial to that second unit for Detroit. So I've really enjoyed Rose in his little, like, second life here in Detroit so far.
And that six-man role could be perfect for him in Detroit, because not necessarily having a ton of perimeter scorers, dependent on Blake, you want to get him some rest. You need somebody who can essentially just go get a basket, and he's done that for them. You mentioned the chemistry between him and Kennard. Kennard had some interesting quotes in a positive way about Derrick Rose and how much he's already impacted him and how much he respects him as a player. So really positive sign for Detroit, who's without their best player at this time. And I guess we could go down this list all day, but I just have to give one more shout-out to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yo, Nick, we are on point, my brother. This is the last guy I said we were going to leave that we have to mention.
Yeah, I mean, he's impressed. You know, there was a ton of hype last year in L.A., and during the postseason he popped off. But in OKC, he's looked like he can really be a big cornerstone for them. 24 points per game, 51 from the field, 37% from three, and he's had some incredible finishes in the lane.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, you know, for whatever it's worth, you know, obviously the Clippers aren't going to look back because they got the two guys they really needed to get to compete. But if you're OKC, you got draft picks and you got this young stud. I mean, this guy looks like he's the real deal. Obviously, we saw shades of it last year in his rookie year, but he's been an extremely compliment player to Chris Paul, which I had questions on if they could coexist. And it looks great to me. Alexander has proven to be an up-and-coming point guard. I love his length. I love his ability to get to the rim. He's been a lot of fun to watch these first couple of games.
Yeah, 100%. And it's still extremely weird to see Chris Paul in OKC jersey. Saw that yesterday, and it just did not feel right. But any rookies really caught your eye so far?
I do want to give a nod to Ja Morant and Kobe White. Those are the two guys who have stuck out the most to me. You know, Kobe White being the sixth man for the Chicago Bulls has been instant offense to this point in time. You know, already a 25-point game under his belt. The guy just flat out gets buckets. That's what he did in high school. That's what he did in college. That's what he's continued to do in the NBA, which is promising because their point guard situation is still kind of up for grabs in Chicago. So I've been impressed by Kobe White. I know you watched him last night against the Nets.
You had to bring John it up. Morant. No, just kidding.
Sorry, but reopen old wounds. But Ja Morant looks pretty much as advertised as well. A guy who can push the tempo, a guy who can score, facilitate, a decent rebounder. And as of right now, with Zion being out, Ja Morant is probably the lead runner for Rookie of the Year.
I'll say this. Ja Morant has some elite athleticism. And when you can stick out on a court full of great athletes, obviously a ton of NBA players and other good athletes on the floor, and your speed and pop just really showcase over everyone else, you know you're going to have a nice career. Some of that was the Nets defense, but his body control and speed was something that stuck out. And also willing to kind of step up in the big moment, had the game-tying shot that forced regulation. He also was able to block Kyrie on his game-winning attempt. So Morant has really stepped up. I think RJ Barrett has some really good moments for the Knicks. You know, the skill set isn't completely polished yet. You know, he still needs to learn some things, improve that shot. But his NBA-ready body is apparent, getting in the lane, finishing inside, creating contact, and then also very active with the steals. So Barrett's been impressive. P.J. Washington started the season great, knocking down a record-setting threes on opening night for Charlotte. And then also, I guess, a quick shout-out to the duo in Miami and Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn, an undrafted free agent who's scored over 20 in three straight games for the Heat. Talk about impressive scouting.
Yeah, no, I mean, Miami's they've hit on everything so far, right? We haven't even seen Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't seen Jimmy Butler, and they beat the Bucks already.
Right. In a dramatic fashion, too. I mean, that was a very good win, comeback win against the Bucks. So, yeah, I think Miami's definitely been a team to watch going forward when Butler gets back. And Justice Winslow, too. I think he's kind of solidified the role that he is going to be the point guard going forward. Goran Dragic having some nice moments. I'm, like, almost positive that we see Dragic move this year.
He looks healthy. He's moving really well out there, and last season he just wasn't moving this way. So I think he could be moved. If not, the Heat just have some nice talent coming off the bench, and I think that's a big thing in the NBA during the 82-game regular season. Like, your starters are going to play great, but you need a bench unit that can come in and either keep your lead or build up your lead.
Yeah, like, if you don't have enough stars, you know, obviously this is kind of the tail in the NBA. If you don't have a lot of stars, you need to have a deep bench. We kind of saw that with the Raptors last year, right? They had the one clear-cut star in Kawhi. And then you had a pretty deep team. You could go eight guys deep, nine guys deep, and be confident in those eight guys, at least for sure those eight guys. I think if OG Anunoby is healthy, they're nine deep last year. So the Miami Heat have kind of a similar blueprint right now, where if you get Jimmy Butler back, obviously that's not Kawhi Leonard by any means, but you have a star, and then you have a lot of just complementary pieces on this roster where you're, you know, eight, nine guys deep again.
Yeah, and there is some potential for another star and possibly Bam being that guy. He's had some really nice stretches two-way-wise. But, Corey, what are some teams that have surprised you in a positive and negative way? Obviously, these are extremely big overreactions because we're only 2 to 3 games in the season. But from what you've seen so far, what's popped off?
So, Sacramento Kings, bad. Not so great through three games. They're 0-3. I was really high on them coming into the season. I'm not really sure what it is yet. I only watched one of their three games, but Trevor Ariza looks a little bit older. Bagley's hurt now, which is unfortunate. I think Harrison Barnes is just way overpaid for the production he gives you. I'm cool with De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield. But the rest of that team, I have a lot of question marks, whereas going into the year, I felt pretty confident about them.
Yeah, they definitely have not performed well. I think a lot of pressure is falling on Luke Walton because, you know, the team essentially only got better and they're playing substantially worse. I guess I'll add another negative in here, and the Golden State Warriors have been bad.
Oof. Lost by a combined 47 points in games 1 and 2 so far this season. Last night it was 70-37 at halftime. You know, a lot of people were saying that, you know, Stephen Curry is going to go off. We're going to see an MVP type season. I was on that bandwagon as well. I was on the Big Play podcast, and they were asking me about MVP odds for Curry and is it a good bet? And I said yes, because you expect Curry to get more shots. What I didn't anticipate is how bad this team would be collectively.
Yeah,
there's just it's just not deep. This is just a bad team from a talent standpoint. D'Lo, I think, has been solid. Obviously, wasn't too great last night, but I have no really issues with D'Lo. Draymond is banged up. He doesn't look as good to me right now. And that just makes for the opposing team to put so much defensive pressure on Curry that once Curry gets, you know, double teamed, or once Curry starts getting flustered on offense, this team really starts to, you know, flounder. And we've seen this through two games so far, is this team without Curry being the driving force, there's just nowhere else to get offense from.
That's a problem. There's really only two very good offensive options on this team, and that's D'Lo and Steph. And after that, you know, Draymond's probably an okay offensive option. Kevon Looney, maybe an okay offensive option. But the rest are question marks. You have a lot of young guys, a lot of, you know, journeymen in the NBA on this team. And it's going to take a lot of coaching and a lot of chemistry for them to even get close to being a good team. And right now, it's hard to see it.
Yeah. And, like, you know, this is another thing. Like, no disrespect to D'Angelo Russell, but if you're an opposing team game planning for the Warriors, it's let's limit Curry and let D'Lo beat us. What I mean by that is, you know, D'Lo is obviously a very good passer, a very good scorer, but it's not like he's a crazy efficient scorer, right? This has been a guy who hovers around 41% from the field. And most teams, I think, they're going to be okay with the fact that if you have D'Lo taking the majority of the shots against your team, maybe not the best case, maybe not the worst case scenario, as long as Curry is being limited.
And if you are lucky enough to have two good defenders, you put one good defender on D'Lo, then you send double teams to Steph. And even you don't have to double team D'Angelo, but if you're just giving him more pressure from the other sources on the floor because you're not respecting anyone not named Curry on this team, then hey, your life's going to be extremely difficult. And we saw that, and we saw D'Angelo get ejected yesterday. And a lot of that was frustration, driving to the rim. There's three guys there. He's not already a great finisher through contact. He's not finishing. He's upset. It's going to be a long season. It's going to be interesting, too, how Steph, Draymond, and Steve Kerr react to this after having so much success. You know, arguably some of the most success we've ever seen a team have in the NBA.
Yeah. So now I have a question for you. Does a bad start by the Warriors make it a higher probability that they trade D'Angelo Russell? Despite everything we've heard, obviously the team's like, no, we want Russell. We want him to be the third Splash Brother. You think that this pushes them to want to trade him to get maybe a more abundance of quality players from, like, let's say the Timberwolves or maybe the Phoenix Suns, the team that's looking to possibly get a point guard? Obviously the Suns have Ricky Rubio now, but what are your thoughts on the probability of D'Lo possibly getting moved this year if this continues to go the way it's going?
I think it's still really early, obviously, but you could look at it two ways. One, hey, we want to compete this season. We're going to trade him. We're going to try to get a whole bunch of pieces. But at the end of the day, how many pieces are you going to get for D'Angelo Russell? And two, you look at it from the other perspective is, hey, we're actually kind of bad. Should we keep this young piece and try to, like, add more young talent to this team and develop? Because we're not going to probably be able to sign any big-time free agents. We're going to have Clay back, but D'Angelo is kind of a safety net because he could be a potential all-star moving forward. He made it last year in the East due to injury, but he could be that guy.
Okay, so fair.
It's tough to say. I mean, it's also how they value D'Angelo, how he fits in their system. And it's probably a little bit of a voice from Steph Curry and Draymond Green as well.
Draymond's got to be better, I'll say. That's the one. Yeah. Draymond, obviously, he banged up his arm in the first game, his elbow. But, you know, they need Draymond to be a lot better offensively, which I'm not even sure you can say is possible at this point in time. But like we said, the Warriors have a lot of question marks as of right now through two games.
And, you know, we expected some issues for them, but just not to this degree. On a positive note, though, who have been some of the surprising teams that have been good?
I mean, So first off, we already mentioned them. And now the record is 0-3, so it doesn't look great. But the Pelicans have been a good surprise. We already alluded to this. They've been in every game so far. You're seeing the young guys play well. So I do want to say that they have been one of the teams that I've positively seen so far. And obviously, you know, they've gotten a couple of games on national television as well already. The Pelicans have been one team for sure that have been a positive, bad team, even though they're 0-3. I've still liked what I've seen.
Yeah, I would say probably not as much a surprise for me. They're playing kind of as I anticipated. I just expect a lot of these young guys to really pop off. The one guy I would say for New Orleans that hasn't played well that is kind of surprising is Jrue Holiday. If he was playing well, these might be wins for them. But sticking to the Western Conference, Minnesota has been good. We talked Karl-Anthony Towns, but Ryan Saunders, the new offense, new defensive system they're running, the team just looks a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, things are starting to come together for Minnesota. When you have a star like Towns, it's obviously a good step in the right direction. And the fact of the matter is, a guy we've given a lot of shit to over the years, or at least, you know, I have for sure, through Twitter and on the podcast, Andrew Wiggins has been damn good. You know, maybe not so great the game you saw against the Nets, but he had the big bucket in overtime. And then last night against Miami, having, you know, a bunch of big-time threes when the game is tied 101. I think he had like 14 points in the fourth quarter in general of his 25. So Wiggins has been a bright spot, and you really needed him to take this step forward. Obviously, he got the big money, took a real big step backwards last season, and it looks like he's starting to get some more confidence in his game, which is crucial. I think that's probably one of the biggest hurdles for a guy like Wiggins is, you know, you have all these expectations, you start to underperform, the critics and voices get louder, and you start to lose your confidence. And it's good that he's had some early success, and maybe this confidence can boost him and the Minnesota Timberwolves farther.
Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument that stretch he had against the Heat was the best stretch he's ever played in the NBA in terms of meaningful basketball.
Yeah.
So
besides OKC games.
yeah, true. But they weren't competing for the playoffs. This could be a playoff season for the Timberwolves. True. I think it's a real possibility. Cat is playing at an MVP-type level, and, I mean, this could be a guy that could be in contention for most improved and MVP if he were to keep up this pace. Like we said, three games of the season, still a lot to happen. But on the East, we've kind of already touched on this team. I think Atlanta's looked pretty good.
No, Atlanta definitely has looked good. Obviously, Atlanta's 2-0. Trey Young and company look good. I've been impressed with John Collins in the couple games I've watched of him. Kevin Herter looks better this year. I think Cam Reddish is going to be a nice fit for them as well. DeAndre Hunter. This is just a very nice young team. I think Evan Turner complements them with a different type of pace coming off the bench. Obviously, when Trae Young's on the floor, it's like full pedal to the metal. And then when you have Evan Turner comes in, he kind of slows down the game and tries to pick apart the defense. Now, Evan Turner obviously isn't a great offensive threat, himself scoring, but a very good passer and has a good basketball IQ. So I've been impressed with what Atlanta has been able to do. And again, you know, starting center in Alex Len, he's been okay so far. You know, some positions may not have the greatest of talent, but this team as a collective has been really good.
Yeah, they have some really young, athletic, switchable wings, which is a huge benefit in the way the NBA is right now. Who else you got as a surprise positive?
A surprise positive, I'm going back to the Western Conference. I've been pleasantly surprised by the Phoenix Suns through three games.
Khalil, you know, appreciates that, one of our OCG guys.
Yeah, you know. Unfortunate that DeAndre Ayton is now suspended for the next 20 games, unless his appeal gets approved, which I'm not positive it will. But, you know, they're 2-1. They had a nice one over the Clippers, probably a game that if you ask me who was going to win that game 9 out of 10 times, I'm going to pick the Clippers, maybe even all 10, if I'm being honest.
If you gave me $10,000 and said, hey, pick a team to win this, I'd feel pretty confident I would be walking away with a W, and that did not happen.
So it's a credit to the Phoenix Suns. Ricky Rubio didn't play last night, but he's been big for them. It's amazing what a starting point guard who actually knows how to run an offense can help your team out. And then Devin Booker, you know, a guy who can fly out, get buckets, and him and Patrick Beverley going at each other the other night was entertaining, to say the least.
Yeah, and you like to see that from Book, too. Taking his game to the next level, not only skill-wise, but leadership, and I guess from a mental toughness perspective, kind of, you know, talking shit with Pat Bev isn't a bad thing. Another team in the West I think has been pretty good, and we mentioned two of their main components, and that's Dallas.
Dallas has been impressive. You know, I'm still not sold on the supporting cast, and I'll hammer that point home all day, because I think when we get more into the season, that's probably what makes this team kind of flatten out. I think they'll be in competition for a playoff seed still. I don't think they have enough talent around Porzingis and Luka Doncic to make it. But those two guys in particular, they look really good. I mean, Luka looks fast. Luka looks slim. Porzingis looks as healthy as I've ever seen him. Definitely looked a little bit stronger as well. And those two guys are starting to get some momentum, some chemistry together. And once that happens, you know, watch out.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is, too, a lot for that team is how many games is Luka going to miss? How many games is KP going to miss? Can the other guys step up in their absence? And that'll be a lot on coaching and just young players taking a stride forward. But, Corey, you want to play some Guess Who?
Yeah, let's play some Guess Who.
So we're obviously very early into the NBA season, but let's get started. Who has had the most blocks at a game so far this season? You have three options because three guys are tied for the top spot.
Jonathan Isaac.
Nope.
DeAndre Ayton.
Nope.
Is it Bam?
Nope. Okay, I'll give you all three. Jared Allen, Anthony Davis, and Brooke Lopez.
Interesting. Would not have thought Lopez.
Yeah.
I should have thought Anthony Davis. I wouldn't have thought Brooke Lopez, though. Or Jared Allen. I didn't think Jared Allen. But then again, this is what he does, right? He's a good rim protector.
Anthony Davis has looked like a potential Defensive Player of the Year candidate early in the season. He's just really showed a different level of effort on that floor. Been impressive. All right, I know you'll get this one. Most rebounds in a game so far this season.
Andre Drummond with 23.
Correct.
Against my Pacers.
Shout out. Fresh. Hassan Whiteside had 19. He's also playing pretty well for Portland.
Yeah, which isn't good for Portland, because I don't think you want Whiteside getting confidence or thinking that he's more than what he should be when Nurkic comes back.
Yeah. Luckily, I personally don't anticipate Nurkic playing this season. Just because of when he broke his ankle, and just like, I just think it's extremely tough for a big guy to get back in time. And we saw what it took for Gordon Hayward, but that's for a no other podcast. Most assists in a game this season. I'll give you a hint. One and two are on the same team.
All right, so it's gotta be Russell Westbrook and James Harden.
So you got him flip-flop. Harden first, Westbrook second.
Okay.
Harden had 14, Westbrook had 13.
Okay.
Most points in a game this season.
Kyrie with 50.
Correct. I was going to say, there's only one guy scored 50 so far.
That's what I was thinking. In my head, I was like, anyone score 60? Did anyone score 50 aside from Kyrie? I was like, no, it's got to be Kyrie.
I thought this guy might do it. The guy who's a number two might break it.
Number two. Was it Trey with 38?
Yeah, Trey with 39.
39.
And then he had another game at 38, so already off to an incredible start. All right, Corey, let's see if you can name five of the top 10 leading scorers currently in the NBA right now.
Five. Damian Lillard.
Yep.
Giannis Antetokounmpo. Yep. Kyrie and Trey are easy.
Yep.
Luka's up there too, I think.
Luka is at number six. So you had essentially five out of the top six. The only guy you were missing was Karl-Anthony Towns.
God damn it. And that's a name I should have got, because we just praised them.
He's averaging 32 a game. A lot of guys are averaging a lot. Just to go down the entire list for the listeners, number one, Trae Young. Number two, Kyrie. Number three, Kat. Four, Dame. Five, Giannis. Six, Luka. Seven, Siakam. Eight, Ingram. Nine, Porzingis. And number 10, Leonard. And just a quick shout out for Corey. Tied for 10 is Malcolm Brogdon.
Woo!
Yep. So That's it for Guess Who. We'll revisit this all year long, but they're just some exciting numbers that kind of started off. And we're adding a new segment this year. It's called Shoot or Shoot. And essentially what it's going to be is I'll give Corey a take and or whatever guest is on the show as well. And he'll have to say if that shot is a layup, a three-pointer, or a half-court heave, or an air ball.
Let me just write this down so I don't mess this up. So it's one more time. Go through it.
So we got layup. So that's an easy one. That's a lock. Yep. They got a three-point shot, which is makeable. It's not a guarantee. We got a half-court heave, which means that there's a pretty much a slight chance. Then we got an air ball, which means you're not hitting nothing.
Okay. All right. I like this. All right. This is good.
All right. First one. The Mavericks will make the playoffs.
Half-court.
Yeah. I like that, too. I like half-court heave. I'm almost willing to put in a logo three-pointer here. We can add a little bit of spice to it, because it's like not almost a half-court shot, but it's not yet a three, so it's like in between right there. Another one. Kat will be the best center in the NBA this season.
I gotta say half-court, because I don't think I'm ready to say he's gonna have a better year than Jokic and Joel Embiid yet. I think it's too early for me to say this. I'm gonna say half-court.
Give me a three-pointer here. I think it's an actual believable thing. One thing that I think will help Kat kind of earn that title is that he has to do the most work on his team for them to be successful. Embiid is surrounded by all-stars. Jokic is surrounded by a possible all-stars and a whole bunch of young talent, where Kat is really the leader on that team on both ends of the floor. All right. The Bucks will not be the number one seed in the Eastern Conference.
Air ball.
Wow. I'm going half-court heave.
I think it's the Bucks. Even though the Bucks lost that bad game against Miami, what I saw the night before, the couple games before against the Houston Rockets and that comeback win, I just like what the Bucks have. That's just a team that I think just, you know, Antetokounmpo is going to get this to be the best team even still. I know, like, the roster is a little bit different, maybe not as great as it was last year, but I think there's more question marks for Philly, I think, long-term. Maybe I'm on the island with that one.
I think if they had more competition, it'd be easier to say they won't be the first seed, because there's been positive things, but there you also can see the difference in roster from last season. And not having Malcolm Brogdon, I think, will impact them at certain points of the year. But next one up, Kyrie Irving will be a top 10 player this season.
I'll say 3 point.
Okay.
I think he's – I mean, don't get me wrong. We're probably going to revisit this question at some point this year. I mean, we had him at 11, I think, on our top 10 list. And I could honestly see him getting into the top 10. But I think those top 10 guys that we have as currently constructed are just more so of a lock. So I'll say 3 points. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility at all.
Yeah, I'll go with 3 here too. I think he still has to earn it. And then also you mentioned a lot of those guys above him – are essentially locks, or some of them are just better two-way players, which kind of hurts Kyrie's case, where he's probably a better offensive player than a lot of guys in front of him. It's just the defense, which has been good in Brooklyn. He's just not going to necessarily be a game changer on that end of the floor.
Yeah, like one guy in particular, like I could see him overlapping, is Lillard. I know there's a ton of Irving and Lillard conversations every year, and this could be the year maybe where Irving retakes the point guard role, being better than Damian Lillard.
100%, especially if he keeps the numbers up, and then it depends a little bit on winning too with the rest of the team. All right, this one's a little bit more personal for you. The Pacers have issues.
Layup. Yeah, Pacers have issues. Just to elaborate on some of the issues, the fact of the matter is, without Oladipo, there's just a really weird they're missing a closer, right? I don't know. Still to this point, who they're going to rely on late in games. I don't know if it can be Brogdon. I definitely don't think it can be Sabonis or Turner, just because it's harder to get centers those kind of looks late in games, especially guys like Sabonis who are predicated to be around the rim, and guys like Turner who I just don't have confidence with him taking a jump shot for the game. And I also, like we mentioned a little bit briefly, defensively, I'm not so sure that Sabonis can live at the four. Kevin Love cooked his ass the other night. TJ Warren has been slightly worse than advertised, not hitting the three so far, which was promising. The fact that I was told he could hit the three. He was hitting the three in preseason. He was hitting the three with the Suns. So bad stretches do happen. But then, you look at the rest of the roster. I don't like Doug McDermott. Aaron Holiday hasn't been good. Justin Holiday hasn't been good. So there's definitely some question marks. The bench has been really bad to start this season so far, which has been an issue. So, yeah, I think it's a layup with issues.
Yeah, I think it's a layup, and then it probably changes to a three-point shot when Oladipo is back. There are some concerns with the roster, but hopefully they can figure it out. Last one I have, and then we're going to touch on a few from Cam's recent piece on OTG5 mega overreactions. But this one's from me. The Warriors should sign Carmelo Anthony.
A 3 point.
Yeah, I was thinking about it yesterday. I put out the poll on OTG's Twitter. It's like, if the Warriors actually want to win games this season, they're going to need some type of competent scorer on that team that's a veteran that could give Curry and even D'Angelo some type of rest. Maybe you try Carmelo for a bit, sign him to a non-guaranteed, and see if you can make it work.
I'm with you on this. Why not? You need offense. I mean, you had 37 points at halftime last night. I mean, at the end of the day, is Melo really going to hurt? You know what I'm saying? You're down 70-37, right? You're relying on Glenn Robinson III, Jordan Poole, these odds and end guys. You don't think Melo could at least play, and maybe the game is, 70-44? Like, I'm not saying it's much better, but I don't think it hurts. I think it's a nice idea to play with for them to add Melo, just for the fact that, like you said, he's a competent scorer. He's a guy who knows how to score. And, I mean, he did work out all summer. So it's not like this guy isn't in game shape. Since he got cut from the Rockets, he still has been playing. He still has been putting in the time, putting in the work. So it's not like you're going after a guy who's just been sitting out of the league since he got cut. This is a guy who's NBA ready. Well, as NBA ready as possible at this stage of his career.
Yeah, and I will mention this. One of our guys in OTG, Justin, mentioned that he didn't believe the Warriors could sign any players until March or February. So that could be something to keep an eye on. Maybe they'd potentially have to make a move or cut somebody if they were looking to do that. But getting to some of Cam's mega overreactions, start with Devin Booker as an MVP candidate.
I'll say 3 point. If the Suns are going to stay this competitive and they're going to remain in games, they're going to be at least beating teams like the Clippers, and Devin Booker's going to be the driving force, you know, at averaging 23 points per game, I think, or something like that. With, I think, a decent amount of assists. I know he had like nine assists against the Clippers. So if he's putting up those numbers and this team is actually winning games, I think, yeah, he can be in the conversation. Because I think Ricky Rubio really helps him.
Yeah, I'm going to go with half-court heave here. I think maybe he can get into the conversation. I'm not super confident the Suns can maintain this level of play. It is the first week of the season. It's easy to kind of catch a team off guard.
Yep.
Trae Young is the best point guard in the East.
This is a half-court heave. I think there's potential for Trae Young to win this title in the Eastern Conference where there's not too many dominant point guards. You know, you look at guys like Kyrie and Kemba as probably and Kyle Lowry, I think, deserves to be in that conversation. But those are really the guys he's going up against. Brogdon maybe is going to be in that conversation once we see more game time. But I think Trae Young has the possibility, but I don't think he's going to get there this year. I still think that title stays probably with Kyrie.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be a half-court heave, close to an air ball, because I think Trae just isn't quite there yet, and these numbers are just extremely unlikely to stay this way for the rest of the season. If he were to somehow kind of keep these numbers even close to what they are, yeah, we have a conversation, but it's a three-game sample size, or actually a two-game for him. And last one, the Minnesota Timberwolves are real playoff contenders.
I'm going to say 3-point. Yep. I'm going to say anytime you have a player like Karl-Anthony Towns, and when your second best player, Andrew Wiggins, starts to play like this, and hopefully he can maintain this, you know, I like Robert Covington. Jeff Teague still has something left in the tank. I think Culver's going to be a bigger piece when the season moves on. Yeah, I think this is a 3-point, especially when we see teams, you know, for example, the Pelicans and Kings. Those are two teams that once, well, I had the Kings, I think, in the playoffs or just missing the playoffs, and I had the Pelicans being another competent team in the race. Those two teams off the bad starts. You know, maybe the Minnesota Timberwolves take off and replace one of those teams. Because obviously we know the Western Conference, the standings will fluctuate throughout the year.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. I think it's a 3-point shot when you have a player like Kat. And then there's also young pieces that are better. And then at the end of the day, you just respect Ryan Saunders for kind of changing the system that they're running and getting it more to the modern NBA.
Definitely. Saunders has been really good so far.
Corey, anything else you want to touch on before we get it here? Obviously, this is the first episode of the season. Plenty more to come in, and we couldn't touch on everything.
Yeah, that's – I mean, you said it best. We can't touch on everything. I will say that the overreaction to what LeBron and Anthony Davis looked like in Game 1, we've kind of already seen them soften. I think what the Lakers have in between LeBron and Anthony Davis will bring that Lakers team to probably – at least a home court advantage in the Western Conference. I think the first game is, you know, you get jitters. You don't always show up. Exactly. Because I know people are saying LeBron maybe took a step back. I was kind of wondering the same thing. He didn't look as good. But the last two games, LeBron has looked like LeBron James.
Yeah, I wasn't that concerned. I think it was just kind of a lot of these new teams are going to take a while to gel. And I've mentioned this. I don't know if it was off air or on air. The teams that essentially have a majority of the core together and they're not necessarily pushing in big pieces that dominate the ball are going to have a little bit of an easier time. And some pieces are just going to gel quicker than others. Guys have other connections that they had in the past. Maybe they played college or AAU together, or some of these teams are bringing in pieces where these guys didn't even know each other before, you know, training camp started. So I think there's a lot of things that we have to take with a grain of salt for essentially maybe the first month and maybe even the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah, I think mostly you start to figure out who guys are by Thanksgiving. That's when you start to really figure it out. Then I think by Christmas, you are who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, and like there's always a possible change, injuries coming back, guys getting healthy, but you'll learn a lot more over the next 2 months than you will. But Corey, first great show of the season. Appreciate you always hopping on. Thank everybody for popping in. You can find us on iTunes, otgbasketball.com, Google Play-Radio, and YouTube.
More to come. Peace out, knuckleheads.